WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The first movie in which Dean Stockwell starred at the age of 7 was opposite Frank Sinatra and Gene Kelly in Anchors Away. One of his famous childhood films is The Boy with Green Hair, a pacifist film from 1948. He dropped out of the Hollywood scene in the early 60s, only to return acting in films which earned him Best Actor awards from the Cannes Film Festival, as one of the Bright Boy Leopold and Loeb murderers in Compulsion, co-starring with Orson Welles, and for his role as the tubercular Edmund in Long Day's Journey and Tonight with Katharine Hepburn and Jason Robards. My guest today on Fresh Air is known as third movie career, after again dropping out of the Hollywood world several years ago. Like many child actors, he found other work, and 6 years ago earned his real estate license in New Mexico. He ran an ad in Variety for his real estate services. Instead, he got calls inviting him to play roles in Dune and Paris, Texas. In 1986, he was the suave drug dealer Ben with the white pancake makeup and cigarette holder, doing the vamp lip-sync version of Roy Orbison's In Dreams in David Lynch's Blue Velvet. And he's now starring as the suave mafia don Tony the Tiger LaRusso in Jonathan Demme's crime story comedy Married to the Mob. Dean Stockwell, thanks for joining us on Fresh Air today.
My pleasure. Good morning, good day, good evening. Hello to everybody.
Hey, Married to the Mob, you seem to be enjoying the work and the movie a great deal.
Yes, I enjoyed doing the role of this mafia don more than any role I've ever done. It was my number one favorite.
But you look so natural and you even sound so suave. It was a cigar-smoking mafioso. Is this a suaveness something natural to you? Are you suave in, at home?
No. No, it's a character. But it seemed to come very naturally to me. In all my years in film, I've never played a character that had any Italian blood. And I'm half Italian. And I think that may have something to do with it. And also, it's a figure of great power and threat of danger, and yet he's charming and sexy and likable.
Well, you play a character with a wandering eye and a wandering gun.
Yes. Mostly wandering eye. The gun is pretty, he's a pretty straight shooter.
Yeah. You once said that you could work without directors, and in fact, some directors could hurt you. But I get the sense that directors like David Lynch, who directed you in Blue Velvet, and Jonathan Demme have been very good for you.
Yes, but what I'm saying there is that I work best if I come to a meeting of minds with a filmmaker before we start, then if I'm just, as it were, let alone to go ahead and do what we've agreed to do, then it's going to come out just fine, and that's the way we work together, Jonathan Demme and David Lynch and Wim Wenders and Francis Coppola and Dennis Hopper, all of the directors I've worked with recently. They let me do my thing, as the saying goes.
Working with Jonathan Demme on a project, I hear, is kind of like being at a big party.
Yes, Jonathan has this unique... It's part and parcel of his way of working. He includes in his operation the notion that everyone is to have a good time and have fun. But it's not an end in itself. It's a means to an end. So that never, it doesn't get in the way of the business at hand, and you end up with a movie that doesn't mean anything because everyone was just having a party. It's not that. Mm. It's just that he wants everyone on a certain level of enjoyment, but he also insists that the work get done in a very professional manner.
Jonathan Demme wanted you to read for the part, but you refused. How come?
Well, I wanted to do the part very much. I really fell in love with it. And in my entire career, I've never gotten a part that I read for. So I think after a while, it's safe to say, if it dawns on you that your statistics are... you're batting 0 for 500 or something, that you might as well not even try it.
So I told
Jonathan that I couldn't read for it, and I just talked to him about it and told him my approach to it and what I wanted to do with it and what I thought I could do with it. And he had that amount of trust for me and let me do it.
So how did you get the parts that you've had? And you've had a lot of them. I mean, if you've never read for them.
Well, the ones we're talking about are the ones that people have seen, and those are all, they've all been offered to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In Blue Velvet, one of the most memorable scenes is that where Dennis Hopper and you as Ben are together at the whorehouse, and you're wearing a brocaded jacket. And
it's funny, everyone thinks it's a whorehouse. No, it was never established, and it's not in the script, and no one ever said or thought that it was a whorehouse. It's odd.
What was it? Was it something else? Or was it,
it was just
unspecified?
It was a pad, just where the guy lived, and those were his weird friends.
Well, you kept good company then. But there was something about that scene. You had, I think, probably no more than a dozen lines in it. Mm-hmm. And you were in large part a foil to what Dennis Hopper's manic energy in that. But it was one of the most memorable scenes of the entire movie. How much did you prepare for that? Did David work with you on that scene? How much of it was sort of your imagination that you brought to the script?
No, that was all mine. There's no description of Ben. That's the character's name. There's no description of him in the screenplay. And after I read it, I figured out what I was going to do, and I called David and said, here's what I'd like to do, and he said, great. And so I came. I did the makeup, I did the wardrobe, and the whole thing.
And including
I've got a weird imagination. What can I tell you?
And including the music, the Roy Orbison in Dreams, was that your choice too?
No, that was David's.
Yeah. Dennis Hopper looked so sweet singing along with you. He was truly, truly moved by your performance into that.
Oh yes. That's my boy Dennis. I just did a picture with Dennis.
Which one?
It's called Backtrack. He's directed it and he stars in it. Dennis and Jodie Foster and myself and Joe Pesci and Vincent Price and a bunch of wonderful people. And that should be coming out probably in next spring.
My guest is actor Dean Stockwell. He plays the Mafia Don Tony the Tiger Russo in Jonathan Demme's new film, Married to the Mob. Stockwell also plays the part of Howard Hughes in the film Tucker. As a young actor, especially after portraying one of those intellectual Leopold and Loeb murderers, you became kind of a mail drop for psychotic scripts, and now you're playing the characters that just kind of angle off the planet. Are you comfortable being out there?
Yes, I'm comfortable. I like doing things with a wide variety, and that's the kind of things that I've been fortunate enough to get. I haven't been in a position where I've been turning things down. I don't have stacks of scripts to pick and choose. The ones that come have been, thank God, wonderful, interesting, and very, very divergent things.
What did your career as a child actor do to you? Did you miss your childhood?
Well, my childhood was a working childhood, so there were aspects of childhood that I missed, and that presented a lot of difficulties. But I have no regrets now. I have my own children, young children now, 3 and 5 years old. And my beautiful wife, Joy, is a great mother. And now I have a great deal of motivation, and I'm goal-oriented toward my family. And I feel very fulfilled now.
Are you going to keep your children away from the movie business?
Well, I don't know if that'll ever even come up. I would encourage my children to enjoy their childhood. I don't see any reason for them to work as opposed to play.
How did you fight the perception of being a former child star in your career? I mean, you were a very cute kid. You didn't fight it.
No, I didn't fight it. I grew up, and I've always appreciated being remembered for work I did as a child. Some of the things that I did, I have a measure of pride about. The Boy with Green Hair, I've always felt proud of that film, and several others. I didn't do too many what I would consider stupid films. I was the one of the children that were starring in films that was doing the more serious type of films. That's just, it was my lot. That's what fell into my lap.
Well, we have an excerpt from The Boy with Green Hair, a scene that you're doing with Pat O'Brien, who's playing your gramps. And I don't know when was the last time you heard or saw the film.
Oh, it's been a few years.
Yeah. This is a scene from The Boy with Green Hair from 1948.
I don't want green hair. I want my own color back.
Now, let's not be too hasty, lad. It's a grand color. Why are you always ready to think the worst? Maybe it's something good.
Something good?
Well, like a mark or something. A medal, maybe.
What would I get a medal for? I haven't done anything.
Well, that's perfectly true. You haven't done anything. Anything at all. But you're still young. You're still young, and maybe this medal is for something you're going to do.
But what is it I'm going to do?
That remains to be seen. But it'll be very interesting to find out. And you mark my words, it'll be something grand.
Do you really think so, Graham?
Oh, I do, lad. I do indeed. Come on, I'll eat your breakfast.
That was from 1948. You were 12 at the time. Did you feel marked then for something special? Was that scene...
Well, I was 11. The film was released later on. No, I didn't feel marked for something special. I felt that I was being treated as something special then, and I didn't like it, and I wanted to get out of it.
Mm-hmm. What drove you out of it, finally? Out of that, the world of Hollywood? Just that being treated special?
I don't know about the world of Hollywood. In other words, wherever I went, I was treated as something different.
Mm-hmm.
My peers of my own age were antagonistic. You know, children can be kind of mean. And they didn't like me because I was something different. So I didn't have a peer group. And the people that I worked with were adults who at one moment would treat me as a child and insist that I remember that I was a child, and at the next minute would expect an adult-level performance and type of work. So it was almost deranging. It's very psychologically a very difficult atmosphere to grow up in. And by the time when I graduated high school when I was 16, I had to get away from it. That's what I did.
So how'd you get away with it? Did you take off, hit the road, change your name?
Yeah, I physically left, yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And I did change my name, and I had been known as a child on the screen, and now I was 16, 17, 18, so no one knew who I was. And that's what I was seeking. I wanted to feel what anonymity was like. And it was very beneficial. I don't really think I would have survived if I hadn't left. And also I had the great good fortune to have a very loving and understanding mother who was protective and looking after my interests. And some other children that were in the same position had less understanding parents that sort of pushed them and forced them to perform.
Your parents were also show business people. So your mother was not a typical stage mother, a pushy stage mother?
No, not at all. And my parents had separated when I was six, so it was her responsibility.
So then you came back to acting, both stage and in New York and in Los Angeles. What brought you back off of the road?
Well, by the time I was 20, almost 21, it was clear to me that I didn't have any training to do anything else. So I attempted to try it again. And I was fairly successful and fairly lucky to be successful. Things happened fairly well, and made a series of films that now, in retrospect, were important projects.
You participated in the story of another family, O'Neill's Long Day's Journey Into Night. And you starred with Katharine Hepburn and Ralph Richardson and Jason Robards, and you were Edmund, the tubercular boy. Was this a role that you just sort of were able to walk right into and sense how you wanted to play it?
Yeah. That's the only way I can do. That's the way I work. I just, when I read something, my first impressions bring about 80% of what I'm going to do. And then the remaining 20% come as I'm shooting the picture or in preparation for it. And that involves embellishments and detail and choices like that. But the real substance of what I'm going to do comes to me when I first read it. And that's invariably what I do and go for.
This is a scene from Long Day's Journey Into Night where Edmund has just returned from the doctor who's given him the diagnosis.
You haven't asked me what I found out this afternoon. Don't you care a damn?
Don't say that. You hurt me, dear.
What I've got is serious, Mama. Doc Hardy knows for sure
that
now.
That lying old quack. I warned you he'd invent
something. He called in a specialist to examine.
Don't tell me about Dr. Hardy. If you heard what the doctor at the sanatorium who really knows something said about how he treated me, he said it was a wonder I hadn't gone mad. I told him I had once. That time I ran down in my night dress to throw myself off the dock. You remember that, don't you? And you want me to pay attention to what Dr. Hardy says? Oh, no.
Listen, Mama. I'm going to tell you whether you want to hear it or not. I've got to go away to a sanatorium.
No!
You're there with Katharine Hepburn.
There's a little bit of light comedy for you folks. Oh, boy. What fun. Yes?
So are you feeling stereotyped by what we've been presenting today?
No, not at all. Good. It's all good. Very different.
Yeah. No, it is all very different. I mean, and part of the sense that came out in looking at Long Day's Journey Into Night in that production from 1962, you played Edmund as a tranquil center within a family that was just fraught with addiction, both psychological and alcohol and drugs. You were sort of the calm center of that production.
Yeah.
Do you remember talking that over with Katharine Hepburn in that particular scene? How you worked that out? No.
No, I talked things over with Sidney Lumet, and you know he would talk things. We rehearsed that for 4 weeks as a play before we started to shoot it, or 6 weeks. It was either 4 or 6 weeks, because it was shot as a play, and it's 3 hours long. At least the original version was. I don't know if it's ever been chopped for television, and it doesn't vary from the text of the play, so. You can't approach it as a normal film. You have to rehearse it as written as a play. And during that process, during that 6 weeks, everything was discussed.
There was a second time when you dropped out of the world of filmmaking in the 60s, in the early 60s.
Yeah.
You were hanging out with Jack Nicholson and with Dennis Hopper and Eric Clapton. And what was it more of a search rather than an escape at that time?
It wasn't a search. If I had been looking for something, it sort of came to me because it's the revolution that happened in the 60s. You couldn't avoid it. It just started happening everywhere. And it seemed to represent to me maybe something that I had missed in childhood, the freedom of it and the creativity of it. So I wanted to quit working professionally and participate in that, and I did. And again, I have no regrets about that. I think it was very beneficial for me. But when I re-entered and tried to get work again after 3 or 4 years in the mid to late 60s, I found it very difficult to get work.
I saw one of your films, Psych Out, that was set in San Francisco. And you play kind of a suave hippie. Who has lines like, reality is rotten and reality is deadly. Was this a...
I was dead broke, and I had to work, and that came along, and I didn't like the role at all. I hated it, but I had to do it.
Yeah, same with films like Werewolf of Washington?
Well, no, that I actually liked a great deal going in, and I thought it was a wonderful project of political comedy and satire. But the film got ruined in the making.
In what way?
Well, it got botched.
Oh. Huh.
I mean, I don't want to lay it on anyone's door.
Yeah.
But it did. It got ruined. You know, when we start into projects, we have to have a lot of faith in everybody because a lot of people are involved in making a film. And there are times when all the elements look right, and then when you see the finished product, it doesn't make it, and it's devastating. It's very disappointing. Then other times, case in point being the two films you just mentioned, Tucker and Married to the Mob, it does work out right, and they come out beautifully, and then the gratification is indescribable.
Are you able to accept the faith and the support of people in the movie business now as a man in your 50s easier than when you were in your 20s or even as a young boy?
Yeah, in my 20s, I was still suffering from the way I'd felt about it as a child, and I couldn't really appreciate my own work or take any satisfaction from it. It wasn't until my late 30s and 40s that I began to really come to terms with that I was an actor, that it was not a useless or bad thing to be, and there was some value in it, and that I could appreciate it for myself.
My guest is Dean Stockwell. He plays the mafia don Tony Russo in the new film Married to the Mob. We'll talk more after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Dean Stockwell is my guest. He began his acting career at the age of 6 and made 55 films, as latest as Jonathan Demme's Married to the Mob, which will open on August 19th. You once wanted to play the role of Prince Mishkin in Dostoevsky's The Idiot. Are you drawn to Russian literature and some of those darker visions of life?
Some of the great classic Russian literature, I think, is the finest that's ever been written. And I have found myself drawn to Tolstoy and Dostoevsky and Pushkin. Not any more than I've been drawn to great American literature or English literature. I love fine literature. The darker aspects, that's one aspect of life. I'm both drawn to the lighter and the darker. Actually, my preferences lie with the lighter, but that's rarely seen because I don't get too many opportunities to do work on the lighter side. And that's another reason why I'm so fond of Married to the Mob, because it's a comedy. It's a romantic comedy.
What would be another example of a light role that you'd like to do, a comic role? Is there a... I've heard that you're associated with a project called Ronnie Rocket.
I'm hoping that Ronnie Rocket will get some financing. That's a David Lynch project, a script that David wrote. And I can't, in all honesty, tell you that is a light on the light side. It's neither the light nor the dark. It's on the surrealist side. This is modern-day surrealism, just as Blue Velvet was, but it's even stranger. It's even farther out, not in a psychosexual way, but in terms of new and inventive images and context. It's mind-boggling. It's so strange, but it's wonderful, and there are a lot of funny things in it. But it's going to take someone with some courage to produce it.
Just because it is such an off-the-wall project?
Yes, that's right, yeah. That's great.
Your film, Boy with Green Hair, was a political film, had a pacifist theme. You were also in a film called Alcindo and the Condor, set in Nicaragua. Are you also interested in political themes in film work?
Yes, but as I'm trying to say, I don't have the opportunity to say, I would like to do this project or I would like to do that project. The things come. Do you want to do this one? You know, and that's the only thing that comes, mm-hmm. right? Over a period of 3-4 months, I'm sitting there with my family, and finally I get a call, and we're sending a script. And I read it, and that's what it is. And I say, yes, I'll do it, because, you know, I have to provide for my family. And it turns out to be Blue Velvet or Paris, Texas, or Gardens of Stone, or To Live and Die in L.A., or Married to the Mob. I can never tell what it's going to be.
Would you like to be on the other end of that, being able to generate projects? Or are you comfortable accepting projects as they just happen to come your way?
Well, the way it's working out, I'm very comfortable, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's working just very, very well right now.
For some time, you didn't feel good about your work. You trashed some of your acting awards.
Yeah, I did. I was a little bombed one night, and I burned some scrolls from the Cannes Festival in the fireplace. My reason for doing it at the time was they weren't very attractive scrolls.
Had nothing to do with how you were feeling about them, other than
I'm sure the subtext was that, as I've told you, that I didn't feel good about my career and I hadn't come to terms with it. But that has changed in recent years when I married and decided to raise a family. Mm-hmm. Now I save everything for my kids. Now I don't think it's bad that they have a father who was an actor. Can't do anything about it, but I mean, I think they'll get some enjoyment out of it.
You sound like you're a survivor, that you've been able to, quit Hollywood, quit the film business, come back, and now because you're dedicated to your family and through the interests of directors like David Lynch and Jonathan Demme, I mean, you have a whole new career, a whole new life again.
Yeah, that's the way it looks, and I'm really grateful. I feel I'm doing my best work now, and things are all, like, coming together the way one would say they should, you know, but it doesn't happen very often, and here it's happening.
You were a cute lad, a very handsome leading... You're welcome. A very handsome leading man, and now
in the 50s,
you're maturing. I mean, are you feeling comfortable with your appearance? Have you let any sort of, you know, the screen looks have changed? You're now
I think I look all right. I don't concern myself with it that much. My work comes from inside. You can't change your looks. At least the guys can't too much, unless you're Michael Jackson. But no, I just let my looks hang out there and work internally, because you can pick someone for how they look, and if they don't have talent as an actor, forget about it.
Do you think you'll ever have a need to sell real estate?
No, thank God. I don't think I ever really could have done that successfully. I was intending to, in all honesty, but I didn't have to. And I really think it would have been very, very difficult for me.
Well, thank you very much for coming in and spending this time with us on Fresh Air today.
Thank you, my boy.
Dean Stockwell plays the Mafia Don, Tony the Tiger Russo, in Jonathan Demme's new film, Married to the Mob. He also appears in the film Tucker as Howard Hughes. I'm Sedge Thompson, and this is Fresh Air.